I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 8:36 a.m. on Friday, February 23rd, 2024. Present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Kronk, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cologne, myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks could mute their cell phones. This morning we have three bills. We do have a hard stop at, actually, 9:55 this morning. First up will be House Bill 83, which is Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. We have the sponsor. We'll have the sponsor give an update on the bill and take questions from the committee. Review the fiscal note, and I'd like to set a new amendment deadline. We did set one last year, but it's been about 8 months now, and so we will set a new deadline since we last looked at this bill. It's been since last year. Next, we'll take up House Bill 145, which is payday loans and loans under $25,000. This is the first hearing for this bill in House Finance, so we'll introduce the bill, hear from the sponsor, and have invited testimony. Then we'll set that bill aside. Finally, we'll hear House Bill 174, which is fiduciary duties regarding social and political interests, and this is also the first hearing for this bill in House Finance, so we'll introduce the bill, hear from the sponsor, and then set that bill aside. So with that, first step is House Bill 83, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. The last time we heard the bill was May of last year. The sponsor is going to provide an update on the bill, and then we'll take questions, and then we'll look at the fiscal notes, and as I mentioned, set the amendment deadline. So with that, I'd like to call up the sponsor, Representative Rauscher, as well as his staff, Mr. Ryan McKee, if you can both put yourselves on the record. And then online, we also have Tina Cunning. She is a ANILCA specialist, and she is available for questions. Also like to recognize, we also have Representative Tomaszewski with us here as well. So if you could both put yourselves on the record.
Yeah. Representative Rauscher, District 29. I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill again. I really appreciate it. Just a real quick recap on what this bill does. House Bill 83 reestablishes the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, otherwise known as, if you use the acronym, that's CACPA, which sunset in 2021. This sets a new sunset date, June 30th, 2031. The commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator and one representative, who represent the diversity of the users and federal land in the state, and they're appointed by the governor and the legislature. For decades, CACPA has operated, and it was an independent and impartial source for information and a center for advocacy on statehood, ANGSA, and ANILCA issues that impact all Alaskans. CACPA helps Alaskans navigate through complex regulations and works with federal agencies to ensure congressional intent is implemented with respect to Alaska's interests. Some of the changes that happened over the summer, I'm going to refer you right now to my chief of staff, Ryan McKee, and he'll go over those changes that we worked on all summer long.
Mr. McKee.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. So, yeah, over the summer, we received feedback from groups such as AFN and Native People's Action on some things they had concerns with. And so we've proposed a few changes. One of them clarifies that the establishment of the commission within the Department of Natural Resources is for administrative purposes only. We had received some concern that the commission basically being housed in DNR was thought of more of just being essentially another branch of the DNR, and we want to make sure that this remains its own commission, for, you know, that they're the ones making the decisions and have all the decision rights. And so what we propose changing the language to specify that this is only there for administrative purposes only. And then adding to that, change two would add language clarifying that the commission itself shall determine which matters are considered and heard by them. Again, really trying to clarify that this commission acts on its own behalf and it's not just a part of the DNR. And then for commission members, a third change we're looking at was it establishes that the public, the non-legislative members of the commission, must represent all four Alaska judicial districts, with no more than three members being from each of the districts. Again, trying to make sure that it has fair representation throughout the areas and not all just in maybe the more urban areas. And then change four requires that at least one member of the commission be enrolled in a federally recognized tribe and another member be a shareholder in an ANCSA corporation. Again, trying to make sure that there's more representation from rural Alaska. And then the fifth change we're looking at is just a technical change. Currently, the bill has an effective date of July 1st, 2023. And so we would just change that if this bill were to pass July 1st, 2024 is when it would take effect. And then we have a couple people online, I believe, for specific questions about the commission.
Yes, thank you. I see online we have Rob Arno, or actually in the room, a former member of CACPA. And then also Chris Curtis, our legislative auditor, is in the room online. We've got Ashley Adoko, director of the Office of Project Management and Permits, Department of Natural Resources in Anchorage. And as mentioned, Tina Cunning, an ANILCA specialist, also in Anchorage. So with that, we'll open it up to questions. Actually, let's see here. Yeah, let's go ahead and open up the questions, and then we'll go to the fiscal notes. So with that, I'll start at this end and move this way. Or, well, I think you're Representative Galvin, and then Representative Hannon, okay, and then Representative Josephson.
Thank you so much, Co-Chair Foster. And I've just read this letter from Native Peoples Action, and it sounds like the changes that were made were specifically addressing these questions. I really appreciate that summary. And my only question is, have they then reassessed given the changes, and have they come to a space where they're comfortable with this change?
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher, through the chair, Representative Galvin. We have not officially received any communication that they're on board, so I don't want to speak for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. With that, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. McKee, do we have a draft of a committee substitute reflecting the changes you've rattled off?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we do not have a current CS for this version. These are the proposed changes. However, the Senate has adopted all these changes in their version, and that one is currently, that one got voted out of Senate Finance on Monday.
So, Mr. Representative Hannon, my question then would be to you, if we're setting an amendment date but we don't have a current proposal, that'll be a struggle. So I'm wondering, and then I guess I would also be looking for not just the updated draft, but the negotiations, concerns, updated letters from the parties that we had concerns from, that the sponsor's office is saying they were addressed over the summer, but we don't have any updated information from anybody besides you, so I'm looking for that.
Right, thank you. Let me take a brief at ease. House Finance back on record at 8:46 a.m. Representative Hannon?
Yeah, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. It just I'm going to struggle because we had some articulated, very clearly articulated concerns last May. We've got formal opposition, and I want to resolve that. It's not that I am doubting the sponsor's office, but, you know, the official record, and I want to see those organizations support for or so I don't have more interrogation. I just want to be able to resolve that to move forward.
Okay. I'd also like to recognize we also have with us Representative Stapp. Mr. McKee.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher through the chair. Rep. Hannah, we'll reach out and see if we can get them to send an updated letter of response, whether they're still against it or if they have changed their minds. And then if we do, I'll make sure to do that. Thank you.
Mr. McKee, maybe the changes that you had mentioned, can you put those in writing and get those to us? It sounds like we've kind of got a little bit of the Senate version is probably coming our way. These changes are changes I think that you mentioned are in the Senate version. The question of whether or not we even get to amendments, depending on when the Senate version comes over, is going to be an issue, a factor, I suppose. But is there anything else you'd like to add? No? Okay. Representative Hannon, was that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess if the intention is to wait for the Senate version to get here, then I don't need him to chase his tail and do all that if it's all expected to come. But
And I think part of I think what we're planning is just trying to get this committee up to speed so that if the Senate version does indeed come over, we'll be spooled up and we'll have an understanding of what those changes are. And so we'll just go from there. Representative Josephson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most of what Representative Hannon noted, I answered my questions. I guess one thing, I do have one question, though. And this relates to, unfortunately, it's undated, but it was the AFN letter that was in our packet. And I'm going to strongly guess because it's got my highlights on it. It was from last year. But I guess one thing about CACFA reports, and I've looked online and I've seen helpful information, is whether, even though there would be a majority position from the commission, how a reader of the reports could hear if there were dissenting views. And I know part of what you've got here, Ms. McKee, is designed to afford the potentiality of dissenting views by having federally recognized tribes or an anxious shareholder, et cetera. but for example, I'm reminded from this letter about the Clutina Lake dispute and RS-2477. There's going to be Alaskans who view that differently. And what I don't think has great value is just sort of an echo chamber kind of report for the reader. Is that something that would be considered not terribly threatening to have to say, you know, two of our 12 members didn't see this issue this way and politely afforded them two sentences on their contrary view, for example. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mr. McKee?
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher through the chair. Representative Josephson, are you asking if they would be able to publish their dissenting views?
But through the chair, it would be part of the report that and it's been very professional. I've looked online. That would be essentially the online version, and then occasionally there was a hard copy that was produced.
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think that would have to be something that the committee or the commission would have to discuss. I don't think we would be putting anything in our bill that would specify that they'd have to.
Thank you.
Okay. Maybe while I've got the opportunity, Representative Rauscher or Mr. Key, you had mentioned the addition of, I believe, was it two seats? And one would be tribal And the other would be, what was the other one?
Representative Foster. It would be one tribal and then another member that would be a shareholder of an ANCSA corporation.
Okay. Usually when I see the inclusion of those two groups, it's usually not somebody who's a member of a tribe, but it's somebody representing a tribal organization. And as far as the ANCSA, maybe not so much somebody who's a shareholder, but somebody representing Native corporations. So just curious, was there any rhyme or reason as to why it was a tribal member and a shareholder as opposed to the other?
Representative Foster, or Ryan McKee, for the record, staff to Representative Rauscher. We had worked on a couple of different options. We had seen, I believe this was in another version of the Senate when they tried to bring this back before. And so we kind of based that off of the language that they had used in Senate Finance. Again, we would be open if there's other concerns. We're trying to address as many of those as we can. So if there is concern with that.
Yeah, and that's probably something that I may look at and reach out to some of the organizations. I think, for example, in our region, Quirik, might be interested, somebody from that organization as opposed to like somebody like my brother who is, a tribal member, but not representing necessarily the region in terms of an organization. So that may be something I look at. The other thing I just wanted to mention is, I say this over and over in terms of, why I think this has some merit. Not only do we have some local folks who have been a part of this, namely Mr. Charlie Lane, who in the past was the chair of this, but also just, some of the folks in my region who have said, they can't go to Serpentine. The only people who can go to the Serpentine Hot Springs that's within the national park are folks who have an airplane or a helicopter. You can go during the winter with a snow machine, but if you're somebody who wants to go in the summer, only people who are affluent can go there. And because you can't take a four-wheeler into the park, and it's only about 6 miles. And so I see this, I see the CACPA as being able to help spearhead the possibility for folks who want to be able to use old trails that have been established from 100 years ago to be able to go onto those trails. Now, I understand, though, that each one of these trails has to be, not litigated, but sounds like it's a, every single one has to be treated differently, and you can't just say all trails that have been, created 100 years ago. Once you adjudicate that, it's not like a in mass all of them are okay. Now you have to take each single one by one, and that's where the value of this commission comes in. So anyway, that's part of my interest. Any other further questions of the committee before we go to fiscal notes? Seeing none. Let's see here. We have the Director of the Office of Project Management and Permitting, Director Ashley Adoko. Are you in the room or are you on the line? It looks like you're in Anchorage. Ms. Adoko, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, Representative through the Chair, this is Ashley Adoko, Director, Department of Natural Resources, Office of Project Management and Permitting.
Thank you. If you could maybe discuss the fiscal notes.
Sure, happy to. Ashley Adoko, Director, Department of Natural Resources, Office of Project Management and Permitting. The request for $145 in personal services, $15 in services and commodities starting fiscal year 25 is for the CACPA Executive Director, housed in OPMP, to carry out the intent of the bill. The position would report to the commission and is needed for administrative purposes, including to stand up and administer the program, coordinating commission feedback, and response to citizen inquiries and concerns about actions on federal lands. The request for an additional 30 in services starting fiscal year 27 is for legal support for only CASPA. It would be accomplished through an RSA from DNR to law. Finally, the request for 10 in travel annually is to hold meetings commensurate with the intent of the bill and administrative purposes. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Hannon and then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, through the chair. And I'm sorry, I missed your name. I was reading.
Ms. Adoko.
Ms. Adoko, would the executive director, the fiscal note and the bill refer to them reporting to the commission? Who has the HR responsibilities and authority for hiring and firing that position? Would that be with the commission or within your office?
Representative, through the chair, I would need to get back in writing on that one. My first thought is that it would be a combination.
Okay, and I guess I'd like to see that in writing, just for the legal understanding of who that person is and whether they are a state employee with state protections and hiring and firing, or whether it's equally shared and up to the commission.
Okay, any further questions?
I have a question.
Oh, yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, I guess, is for the, it could be for anyone that could answer it, I suppose, the co-chair or perhaps the sponsor. I see in the some of the letters and input that there's a request for an additional board seat that is reflective of the, the tribes and corporations like we've talked about are entities. My question is that prompted by anything that's happened on the board by the board in the past, or is this just an additional request for a board seat because it's a regarding federal lands and there's the potential for additional just because a native because Representative Foster was saying that their particular lands may be on the other side of some federal lands and so on. I just was wondering if there's any action the board's taken that has been contrary to, anything that the tribes or the corporations have brought up.
Representative Rauscher.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, to the co-chair. I have my understanding is that is to make the board a little bit more even-handed, a little bit more where there's better representation when making decisions, when looking at things as a whole. It's not really directed to anything from the past. This is just that they're looking to make sure it has more eyes on it than just those without those and included. So I think it's just part of being fair.
Follow. Thank you. So I guess I just want to make sure that it's not in response to something that had bubbled up somehow. All right, very good. Thank you.
Maybe on that note, I just wanted to mention one of the amendments that I had come up with last year was to address AFN's concern, and I think I've got this correct, but the big concern is just wanting to make sure that the public would not have free rein to just trespass on their private lands, which I think that would be the case, for anybody, but particularly so for Alaska Native corporations who have just a lot of land in the state, and they can't, monitor it all. But one of my amendments was to clearly enunciate that, CACFA wasn't to try to open up old trails that might go over private lands for the same reason I wouldn't want, folks, driving through my backyard. And so I just wanted to put that out there to try to address the AFN concern. Representative Rauscher.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair for the record. Thank you for being able to explain it a little better. I appreciate that.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. And I do recall 10 years ago, it was literally 10, when we were looking at this issue, looking at the online version of the report, and I found it very professional. But I just want to make sure, for example, a year ago, next week, the Supreme Court rejected a state attempt to overrule a federal ban on bear baiting on the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge. This went to the Ninth Circuit. The Supreme Court said the federal government can ban some bear baiting, whatever their rulemaking called for. The Supreme Court refused to take that up, making it binding. CACFMA wouldn't be designed to have a call to arms or express bombast or outrage. It would be informative. Correct? I mean, I guess I don't want to create a state document that is designed to fire up the masses in a tone that is inappropriate.
To the chair, Representative Rauscher, to Representative Josephson. No, I don't believe so. This is basically what my original statement was about. This is for information gathering, for being able to understand all points of view in an argument, whether it's from ANCSA, ANILCA, or advocacy on behalf of the question that they're debating at that time, that all points are covered in that discussion. It's not to be used as what you have referred it to, and that's the understanding of what this is all about.
Thank you. And for the record, I think in 2013 or 2014, I voted to reauthorize it. Is my name. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no further questions. Oh, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Could you just maybe, you or someone else, just talk about a success from CACFA in the past that has taken place?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, to Representative Tomaszewski. If you'd like, I can call Rod Arnold, who has actually sat on the board before, if it will please everybody here, and he might be able to answer that question more definitively for you all.
Mr. Arno, if you'd like to come up, and if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Yes, my name. You hear me okay?
Yes.
Rod Arno, and I'm the policy director for the Alaska Outdoor Council. And I served on CACFA until it lost its funding. So to answer the question, I think one of CACFA's biggest successes was on local hire, where we were trying to make sure with the Department of Interior, when they were hiring new folks to work on the in the conservation system throughout the state, that they would have the ability to hire folks that lived in those rural areas. And that was contested, and we had to, you know, to go through the courts to do that, you know, with the idea that if we had more of the folks that were working for the Department of Interior who actually lived on the land next to those federal lands, that better decisions would be made than what we were getting from the directors in the Department of Interior in D.C.
Follow up?
No, that's perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that information.
Thank you. We've got a question, Representative Stout.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to our wonderful, hopefully soon to be new CACFA folks again. So I just wondered if you could speak to the aspect about the historic process CACFA played in helping Alaskans navigate through the federal permitting process. You know, when I think of some of the most challenging things in recent memory is the amount of time and effort we spend, not just at a state level, but individual level on permits, only to kind of fail the permitting process because there was a detail here or there that we didn't get through. So can you just talk about how this commission used to assist in doing that?
Through Rod Arno, Alaska Outdoor Council, through the co-chair, Representative Stapp. Yes, Actually, you know, what CACFA did was it gave the public an opportunity if they had were having problems on permitting or access or something like that to bring that to CACFA. And then CACFA was able to work with DNR, to work with the Department of Law, to, you know, look at the permitting process, which they do in DNR, to try to simplify it as much as possible. So, you know, the idea of CACFA was is that the public would come to them, not so much that the CACFA commission would be sitting there, you know, thinking of things that they knew that were inconsistent with the federal law that was governing those conservation system unit areas.
And a quick follow-up.
Hello?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, through the chair. Would you think it'd be fair to say that there's plenty of just regular Alaskans who came to talk to you folks with issues regarding permitting that DNR might have never known about if it hadn't been for you guys?
Co-Chair, Representative Stepp, yes, absolutely. An example that comes to mind, you know, real quick is the trapper cabins on federal lands. And so that's something that CACFA was able to try to work through in changing the policy to establish, you know, that trappers who had trap lines and for safety reasons could have, you know, the cabins and for winter.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Arnault. So I think what we'll do is we'll go ahead and set an amendment deadline for Monday, March 4th at 5 o'clock. Please email or deliver your amendments to my staff, Brody Anderson or Helen Phillips, our House Finance Clerk, by Monday, March 4th at 5 o'clock. And with that, thank you very much, Representative Rauscher, Mr. McKee. So we'll move on to the second of the three bills that we have today. And the next one is House Bill 145, which is payday loans and loans under $25,000. And I'd like to call the sponsor, Representative Wright, and his staff, Ms. Rachel Gunn, up to the table. If you can put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation online. We also have Division of Banking and Securities Director Rob Schmitz available for questions. So with that, if you'd like to put yourself on the record.
Representative Wright from District 22, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this piece of legislation today. This legislation addresses payday loans with astronomical interest rates up to 521%. Rates that turn a lifeline into a chain were not legal in Alaska in 2004. Despite dire warnings from consumer protection groups back then, exemptions for payday lenders were made. 20 years down the road, we have the worst consequences from this oversight that came to fruition. Harming the most vulnerable members of our population, payday loans marketed as an instant solution to a short-term emergency are structured as a debt trap by design. HB 145 removes the exemptions that have allowed such predatory practices to flourish unchecked. This legislation will align the interest rates and fees of payday loans with those charged by traditional banks, restoring fairness and equity to our lending laws. Today, we have a chance to do right, to right that wrong and ensure no Alaskan has to suffer under the burden of predatory interest rates ever again. And with that, I'll pass things over to my legislative aide, Ms. Rachel Gunn.
Thank you. Through the chairs, for the record, my name is Rachel Gunn. The stark reality is that more than half of Alaskans are living paycheck to paycheck. For many, the margin between managing daily expenses and financial ruin is razor thin. Personally, my background is in tourism, sales, mining, fishing, but the first ever paid sick day I had was here last year. When life inevitably happens, as it does every year to thousands of residents in our community, folks turn to payday loans. Interest rates for these payday loans average 421%. This is because the rate is not set by the friendly competition of the market, but by an exemption these payday lenders, for payday lenders crafted in Alaska statute in 2004. At that time, consumer protection groups warned us of the consequences of this exemption. It's a rate so astronomical, it's hard to fathom. But if you pay that interest rate on a $300,000 house, you'd be paying $1.6 million yearly for the 30-year term of the loan. You don't need credit history to access a payday loan. You just show up with a paycheck and your bank account details, or the stub from your paycheck. The average payday loan taken out in Alaska is $440. The average person taking out a payday loan doesn't have the money saved to cover the expense in the first place. It's unlikely they'll be able to have the money to pay the loan back in 2 weeks. They might not even be able to cover the exorbitant interest charge during that time. The average time it takes the average Alaskan to pay off this loan is 5 months, and these folks access payday loans 5 times a year. Payday loans target folks locked out of the regular consumer borrowing markets. Perhaps due to the poor credit history or no credit history at all, they can borrow money they need to avoid the immediate crisis, and they default at incredibly high rates. Payday loans cost Alaskans $29 million a year, and 68% of these payday loans are taken out online. The majority of these payday lenders are not incorporated in our state, and that $29 million leaves and goes directly into their pockets. 20 states have capped interest rates at 36%, which is a far reasonable number, more comparable to credit cards that we have. And active duty military members and their dependents are federally protected from these predatory rates. But once the member separates, they no longer enjoy that protection. One study done in Texas showed that while only 1 in 10 folks in the general population take out the payday loans to cover expenses, the rate jumped to half of the veteran population. Now, one of the big players in the 2004 kind of scheme that devised this loophole for the interest rates no longer operates in Alaska, the big payday lender, but they left a legacy in Portview and small claims court of 18,809 cases. We do have the unique setup with our PFD, the way the permanent fund is distributed, that is a lifeline for our most vulnerable populations. And when we're able to garnish the PFD to go toward these predatory lending, we're removing the most basic lifeline that people rely on. What we set to do with this legislation is to remove the exemption for the payday lenders under Small Loans Act, and it flattens the interest rates for these types of loans at 36%. That creates transparency. It covers the entire cost of the loan, so there's no hidden fees or expenses. You know what you're getting. You know what you're paying for. It also creates an anti-evasion provision so the predatory online lenders can't use rent-a-bank schemes posing as financial institutions in states with lax banking regulations to utilize loopholes to target Alaskans. With that, I'm concluding my presentation.
Representative Wright, do you have anything further?
I'd like to add that a lot of folks are being affected across Alaska. It's truly unfortunate because on top of that, they're being affected and it's hurting our economy as well. So this the funds that they are collecting, it doesn't stay in the state. 9 times out of 10, it's going to a different state, and I won't say what state because I don't want to hate that state. We're bigger than that state. So, but I got to say that it's something that we need to think about, and we need to take a serious look at it and understand that it not only hurts the most vulnerable, it also hurts our economy as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I've got a couple questions. But I just wanted to also reiterate that just today we're just doing the introduction with questions, so there's no public testimony today. There's no fiscal notes or no amendment deadline. We're just kind of putting it on the table for now. So with that, I saw a couple hands go up. Representative Ortiz, Representative Colombe, Representative Galvin, Representative Johnson. I believe that was everyone. So with that, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair, and thank you, Representative Wright, for bringing this bill before us. It seems like it has a lot of merit. It was an astounding statistic that you put forward on the $29 million a year it costs Alaskans for these type of loans. How did you calculate that? I'm not questioning it. I just wondered how you – do you have access to the kind of data that could make that an accurate number?
Ms. Gunn?
Sorry. Through the chair, to Representative Ortiz. We do have an alarming amount of a good amount of data, but that question's probably better where that exact number comes from for our test. We've got Jen Griffiths, who's the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the AKA Children's Trust on the line. She'd probably be better suited to answer where that exact number came from.
Ms. Jen Griffiths, if you're online, if you can just state your name and your affiliation, and if we need to, we can restate the question.
Yeah, for the record, Jen Griffiths, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy with Alaska Children's Trust. And yes, restating the question would be helpful, please.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. I was wondering on the $29 million figure that is costing Alaskans for these payday loans programs that, you know, it's costing Alaskans, that's quite a bit of money. I'm wondering, do we have access to that, to the data that makes that statistic an accurate one? I'm not necessarily questioning it. I'm just wondering how you even know something like that in relationship to the total cost to Alaskans.
Yeah, absolutely. I have made note of that. I will get the actual methodology that was used to come up with that number, and I can send that to the committee members.
That would be good. Thank you.
In addition to Ms. Griffiths, we've also, and I mentioned we've got Robert Schmidt, Director for the Division of Banking and Securities online, Don Hanisch, who is the Operations Manager for Division of Banking and Securities in Juneau, Tracy Reno, Division of Banking and Securities. So with that, I believe next I had Representative Colombe, and then Representative Galvin, Representative Johnson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Stapp. So with that, Representative Colombe.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, thank you for bringing this forward. I had two questions. One is, I'm sorry, but like, you were talking a little fast, so I didn't know what the cap was. Does your legislation put a cap on the interest rate for these?
Yes, it's at 36%.
36%.
Good chair.
And second, do you have to follow up?
Follow up.
Do you have a sense of why veterans are so vulnerable to this, why their numbers are double everything else?
Through the chair, to Representative Kulum, I can start to answer that question. What we see with the payday lending industry in the first place is that people that have these careers, or veterans that might have separated earlier, kind of get used to the protections that you would have, your housing, transportation. A lot of these folks join the military really young and then do their 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, and they get out and they're kind of starting over without a lot of oversight or, you know, family to guide them or help them out. So we're seeing these oftentimes younger folks, elderly folks on a fixed income, recently separated military members, are all seeking out these loans. It's definitely harms, or these loans are targeted to the most vulnerable low income of our population.
And can I do a follow-up? Is there a sense that these companies locate themselves outside of military installations? I mean, is there evidence that they're actually targeting that group?
Through the chair, Representative Wright, for the record. Absolutely. If you go in my district, you would definitely see some just outside the base. And it's astonishing to know that these folks, they prey on them. So it's where the clientele is.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. After we get through the next four questions, we'll probably switch over to the next bill just to make sure we've got enough time. This is just an introduction today, so this will be back before us. So next up again in the queue, we've got Representative Galvin, Johnson, Tomaszewski, and Stapp. Representative Galvin. Okay, Representative Johnson.
Oh, boy. All right, very good. I guess I only have one question, and I obviously there's a place for many types of things in the market, right? I mean, and my question is this going to reduce the amount of money that's available for people to borrow? I mean, there is a time when I certainly remember being young and I wasn't going to be able to go pay for something out of pocket, but I certainly needed the money quick and didn't necessarily have the credit to go to a bank and get quick money. So, I mean, I would be way more likely to go to something like this than something I knew I could pay off maybe. And I hear what you're saying about the cycle of lending, but I also recognize that people can make their own decisions about things as well.
Through the chair, to Representative Johnson, we can say right now we know that 68% of all payday loans in Alaska are being taken out online. We have an incredibly innovative fintech sector. We've got credit unions that are offering these small loan products. We have more access to small loans than ever. And a lot of what we're seeing with these locations and where they are is the convenience and like the education there. So with a bank account, a lot of the smaller credit unions are offering these small loans at the reasonable terms. Also, 20 states have capped the interest rate for these payday lenders at 36%, and the small loan market is alive and well in all of those states.
Follow up, please. Do you anticipate any businesses being put out of, places being put out of business by this? I mean, specializing this.
Sorry. Through the chair, to Chair Johnson, we do not anticipate any businesses being put out of business by this that are currently incorporated in Alaska. I can't say to whether out-of-state incorporated businesses will continue to do business, but the payday lenders in Alaska that are currently operating, it's 10 to 15% of their business. They're mostly pawn shops and have other products. So we wouldn't anticipate that removing or capping the interest rate from these astronomical interest rates to 36% would put them out of business.
Okay. Another follow-up?
Follow-up.
So is this actually an interest rate, or is it like a user, an advance fee? I mean, what's that really called?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. So this exclusion, this exemption for these payday lenders was brought about in legislation from SB 272 in 2004. And that's where we had the warnings from AARP, from ACBIRG, from Catholic Charities about what this could cause in this state. The exemption is what predates it from having an interest rate. The average interest rate for these loans is 421%, up to a maximum of over 500%. They're charging the statutory maximum that's allowed within that exemption in statute. So it's not an interest rate set by market like we would see in other products.
Is it actually an interest rate, though? Is it something different than I don't know that much about this particular the definitions in this bill, but it doesn't seem like an interest rate to me. It seems like a cash advance fee or something like that.
Through the chair, Director Schmidt or. We also have Tracy Reno from the Division of Banking Securities, but interest rates are interesting because it's what we're doing with the payday, with the Small Loans Reform Act in this part of the legislation is when it sets the interest rate at 36%, that's for the reasons of transparency. So it's fees and the interest, like how it compounds, and the fees. The way that it's set up currently, it's a compounding interest rate. So you're charged not only for the interest of the loan, but the principal and the balance. So it is an interest rate, but it depends on what your definition of interest is. So I'll definitely defer to the director or the Tracy Reno from the Division of Banking Security for that question.
That's okay. I can take it off.
Okay. Okay. Sounds like this will be maybe a call off to the side will be made. Sounds like get some clarification on that. Representative Wright, did you have any? Okay. Okay. If that is the entirety of your question, Representative Johnson,
yes.
Was this on this question, Representative Hannon? Okay, thank you. Okay, so we'll go to Representative Tomaszewski, STAT, and then Hannon, and then we're going to move on to the next bill. So with that, Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, to the chair. Thank you for this presentation. So you mentioned that you can do this online. And so does your bill prevent like online companies from out of the state of Alaska? And how is that going to be regulated so that we know that the folks here are not
just going online and using the same service instead of using the corner, the loan, payday loan on their corner in their neighborhood.
Ms. Gunn?
Through the chair to Representative Tomaszewski, it does have an anti-evasion provision within this bill. So what that would basically do is create a safe harbor. So if you're charging the Alaskan an interest rate above the 36%, then you have to play by Alaska's rules. If you're charging an interest rate under 36%, then there's no regulation.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we've got Representative Stapp, then Hannon, and then we'll move on to the next bill. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, this might have to go to the our banking people online. But looking at the analysis here, currently we have licensing fees for these DDA, 19 DDA, whatever, deferred deposit advance, loan sharks, whatever, you know. And the out-of-state, I guess my first question is, are the out-of-state lenders, they're registered under this licensing fees? They pay these licensing fees. Is that correct?
Ms. Gunn?
Through the chair, I'm going to defer to Tracy from the Division of Banking Securities to give you a more articulate answer than mine.
And I'll go ahead and ask Tracy the second part of the question then, Co-Chair, if I may.
Okay. Representative, do you want to...
I'll just say, yeah, so my thought is this is actually probably a really interesting solution where if that fee right now it's $3,000, it's a renewal fee. I mean, if you really wanted to test the performance of the market, you could just make that fee $100,000 to the state if they want a license to do this, and that probably would make them change their behavioral practices. But I'd like to hear what the bank people say.
Ms. Tracy Reno, if you're online, can you state your name, your position, and we can restate the question if you needed?
Yes, sir. This is Tracy Reno. I'm with the Division of Banking and Securities. I'm the Chief of Examinations, and I can answer that question through the chair. The way that it's set up currently, yes, everybody pays a licensing fee. In the bill, because we're trying, this bill is removing the exemption for payday lenders or deferred deposit advances is what we call them. We're trying to mesh that type of loan into the Small Loan Company Act. And so we're trying to do a little bit of, you know, amendments to make that work. So what would happen is they would pay fees through the online, nationwide multi-state licensing system as all the small loan companies currently do. And so that's an annual renewal fee. And just a side note, we do have 12 current licensed locations. They are all out of state at this time, and this is pulled as of this week. So as of February 19th, we had 12 licensed locations, 7 approved companies, all are out of state. Three of them have branches in Alaska, 1 website, and then 1 mobile app. So the fees that are being paid are annual renewals. And they would be done just like the small loan company if this bill goes through and removes the payday or the Deferred Deposit Advance Act. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, so follow-up, Co-Chair Foster. So there are separate license fee now, correct? So if this bill goes forward, they would be rolled under the existing license fee. So my question is, if you have 19 folks who are engaged in this under a separate license fee now, one would think that if I took that license fee renewal from $3,000 to $100,000 a year, that would net revenue for the state and change probably behavior. So I'm curious of what that concept is.
Ms. Reno?
Tracy Reno, Division of Banking Securities. I believe it's the maximum loan amount is $500 or less. It's a 14-day advance maximum. My assumption would be, and this is my own personal opinion, is that it would put the business, this type of loans out of business. They couldn't make enough money, on a $500 loan to stay in business with a $100,000 annual fee.
Yeah. So just one last follow-up, Co-Chair Foster. So I am correct that they currently have a different license than they would be moving to in the event that this bill passed. Is that correct?
This is Tracy Reno. Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hennen.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I've got follow-up sort of on both Tomaszewski and Stapp's question, but on the license fee, the fiscal notes indicates it says some may choose to move to this new type of licensure. So is there still a remaining licensure that they could operate under?
or if, but I, my question comes from you, you say in the fiscal note, it says, if this legislation is adopted, some DDA licenses may choose to apply for licensure as Alaska Small Loans Act, which is where the cap of 36% is. So that's the loophole the bill's trying to close. But that statement in the fiscal note indicates that they wouldn't all, they may not all, so they would still be able to operate under their current licensure?
Ms. Reno or Mr. Schmitz?
This is Tracy Reno with the Division of Banking and Securities through the chair. My understanding is that this bill is completely repealing the Deferred Deposit Advance Act, which is the Payday Lending Act. That license type would go away completely. The people that are currently doing this type of loan activity would then be able to apply for a small loan company license, which allows them to do $25,000 or less under 36% if they choose, $25,000 or less under usury. If they choose to go over usury, which is around 10.5% depending on the day, if they choose to go over 10.5%, then they would have to get a small loan company license. So it just depends on the type of business that they're doing. And if they choose to apply for a Small Loan Company Act in Alaska license with restrictions on the interest rate, so it would go from 400-ish% depending on what their program is to 36% as a maximum.
Okay. And then I've got one follow-up to
Representative Hammond.
Representative Tomaszewski's question. What will be the legal structure that will prevent somebody from being online and using a non-licensed Alaska predatory loan company?
Tracy Reno, Division of Banking Securities, through the chair. We normally get complaints occasionally when somebody has a problem. We are able to go out and investigate and kind of do searches online. We get things from other states that bring things to our attention. So normally, you know, it's word of mouth until somebody says something. We could, you know, we could, if we had capacity, do an investigation to kind of go online and do a search. But it's something that is usually brought to our attention because somebody had a complaint.
So one follow. Mm-hmm. So the banking division does have investigatory staffing that if a non-licensed in Alaska was doing predatory lending, you have the ability to shut down that lending platform in Alaska or would under
yes,
this legislation.
Yes, we do. And I'd like to – sorry, this is Tracy Reno. I'd like to refer that to my director to address that person.
Mr. Robert Schmidt, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, Representative, this is Robert Schmidt. I'm the director of the Division of Alaska, the Alaska Division of Banking and Securities. If we were to discover, well, for one, unlicensed activity in any of our programs areas is a fact of life, and we routinely take action against people who engage in unlicensed activity. And I would like to assure every member of the committee that if we were to find out that if this bill were to pass and that somebody was giving loans at an annualized interest rate over 500%, we would absolutely for sure pursue this enforcement.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the bill, and I just want to make sure that we're closing the loophole in the 21st century where so many of these loans are happening online and making sure that we're doing that.
Great. Thank you, and thank you, Representative Wright. We do need to move on to the next bill. We've got about 20 minutes left. This was just meant to be an introduction for now, and so appreciate you bringing this to us, and we'll see you at another meeting. So with that, the final bill we have up for today is House Bill 174, Fiduciary Duties Regarding Social and Political Interests, and I'd like to ask Representative McCabe and his staff, Ms. Angela, I believe, Steffel, to please come to the table, put yourselves on the record. We also have Pam Leary, Treasury Division Director, Alicia Guthrie, Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, Director of Administrative Operations. They are available for questions. So if you could welcome to House Finance and please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and good morning, Co-Chair and members of the House Finance Committee, and thank you for hearing House Bill 174. For the record, I'm Kevin McCabe, representative for House District 30. With me, I have my staff, Julie Morris, actually, who is available to read the sectional into the record should the committee wish. So for the bill introduction, HB 174 prioritizes the financial or pecuniary interests of beneficiaries when maintaining or when managing state funds, ensuring responsible investment decisions focus solely on the financial gain. The bill strengthens efforts to establish a sustainable long-term fiscal plan for Alaska by eliminating external social, political, or ideological goals from investment considerations. It will align Alaska with a growing number of states, introducing legislation that emphasizes responsible investment management and fiscal responsibility. It prohibits practices like board stacking and ensures that members of key boards prioritize financial gain and refrain from advancing external interests. Passage of HB 174 signifies a significant step forward in responsible investment management for Alaska, safeguarding citizens' financial interests for the state's long-term benefit. With the bill's passage, Alaskans can trust that their financial interests are being protected, contributing to confidence in the state's management and fostering a stable economic environment. My hope is that it will fortify the development of a durable, sustainable, long-term fiscal strategy for the state, devoid of transient trends or influences. That pretty much sums up the bill. I'd just like to say that, investing in sustainable funds that prioritize ESG goals is supposed to help improve environmental and social sustainability of business practices. Unfortunately, close analysis suggests that it's not only not making much difference to companies' actual ESG performance, but it may actually be directing capital into poor business performers and poor business models. So with that, I will let my staff read the sectional, if you would like, Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, it looks like it's only three sections, and so that would be fine if Ms. Julie Morris, you could put yourself on the record.
Good morning, Co-Chair Foster, and thank you for hearing us this morning. For the record, Julie Morris, staff to represent Kevin McCabe. Sectional analysis for 174 is as follows. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 3710071 to require that fiduciaries of state funds prioritize beneficiaries' financial interests, banning the consideration of social, political, and ideological factors in investing decisions. Section 2 and Section 3, Alaska Statute 3710220, to require that the Alaska Retirement Management Board and the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation Board prioritize beneficiaries' financial interests, prohibiting consideration of social, political, and ideological factors in investing decisions. And that's the end of your sectional.
Okay. Representative.
Okay, so thanks, Co-Chair Foster. I appreciate the opportunity to present HB 174. Online, there's a few folks, Pam Leary, Department of Treasury Director, and Alicia Guthrie, I believe, which is Alaska Permanent Fund, APFC Director of Administrative Operations, for questions. And I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Great. Thank you very much. And as we did on the last bill, we're not going to be doing public testimony or fiscal notes or setting amendment deadline today. We're just introducing the bill and entertaining questions. So with that, anybody, Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Representative McCabe, thank you for bringing this bill before us. It raises some interesting questions in relationship to the status quo. Would it be your position that the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, for example, doesn't have enough autonomy to operate in the manner which this particular bill tries to further? In other words, is there an existing problem, would you say?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, through Co-Chair Foster, Representative Ortiz, I don't believe that the current board is hamstrung by this or is actually investing in any ESG companies simply for their ESG thing. For instance, I believe they invest in a big, say, Exxon. Exxon has a very robust ESG policy, but Exxon also makes money. So my question would always be, you know, if the permanent fund came to me and said, hey, we think this is going to hamstring us because we can't invest in Exxon because they have an ESG policy, my question would be, do they make money for you, for us, for our retirees, for the permanent fund? And if the answer is yes, then they can absolutely invest in Exxon. There is no intent at all to limit what they can invest in. However, if Exxon were not to make money because of their ESG policies, or if they simply focused on ESG, whether it be like a cylinder style, then the answer would be no, you shouldn't be investing in that, and the guidance would be right here.
Follow up.
Thank you for that. Because it's my understanding that the permanent fund, their primary mission is to invest in the for the best interests of the long-term existence of the fund and the best interests of the owners of that fund, which in the essence are all Alaskans. So my question, I guess, is in the example that you gave, wouldn't it be likely that they wouldn't invest in Exxon if, in fact, they weren't making money because of their ESG policies or whatever?
Yes. Right now, the permanent fund board, as they are structured right now and what the permanent fund is doing, are absolutely investing for maximum investment. But we have seen evidence that other boards around the country are embracing the ESG mindset, if you will, and investing more for social and environmental and governmental factors than they are for fiscal factors. And all this does is say, hey, PFD Corporation, Retiree Corporation, this money belongs to the state and retirees or to state beneficiaries, the dividend recipients, and we would like you to invest it for maximum, and I think they call it risk-adjusted performance. Mm-hmm. So that's all it does is provide a little bit of guidance, say we don't want ESG to be the primary focus of your investments. We need fiscal, pecuniary maximization of our investments because that's what retirees are going to depend on. Mm-hmm. Retirees can't eat or live off of an investment in Solyndra, but they can live and eat off of an investment in Exxon, if that makes any sense, because it's making money. Solyndra is no longer with us, right? So,
thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Also, I'd like to mention, I think I said Alicia Guthrie was here available. She's the ASD for a permanent fund, but it's actually, it looked like Pauline Swanson is with the permanent funds. With that, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. My question is similar to Rep. Ortiz's, but I guess I want to go to Julie Leary at the Treasury with regard to the ARM Board, and specifically whether the ARM Board has had any considerations or investment efforts for any companies based on ESG policies.
And Ms. Pam Leary, if you're online, can you just state your name and your position?
Sure. For the record, this is Pam Leary. I am with the Department of Revenue, and I'm the Director of the Treasury Division. In fact, the ARM Board and other fiduciaries follow the fiduciary standard in AS 3710-071. It's been around for a very long time, and it is, in fact, more stringent than I think every other state. And it's served us well because anytime we've been approached for investments for or against something, we have to stick to our statutes, and we don't consider factors other than what is in the sole financial interest of beneficiaries. That is what is in the statute. So we already do have a sole financial interest statute that exists, and we have not followed any ESG investments or anti-ESG investments other than those that have strictly financial benefits to the funds.
Thanks. So, through the chair, I just want to restate. So, by statute currently, the state may not invest on anything but the financial basis for those investments. And the consideration of ESG policies is not an element by statute that can be allowed for state investment funds.
For the record, this is Pam Leary, and the answer to that question is correct, yes.
Thank you.
Representative McCabe, do you have any comments, or Representative McCabe?
Sure, thanks. So we have seen a number of states that have similar similar laws on the books sort of go down this rabbit trail of saying, well, yes, the ESG investment is we're not supposed to be taking that into account, but the long-term effects of ESG, such as carbon carbon credits, carbon taxes, the long-term effect will eventually be profit-making. So there's ways around the law that we're concerned about, and we just want to make doubly sure that the direction from us to the ARM board and the permanent fund is very clear that we are only interested in financial gain for our retirement funds and for our permanent fund. There's also some evidence that some companies shift and they publicly embrace this ESG thing for a cover for poor business performance. A recent paper by Ryan Fulgrim of the University of Northern Iowa and Matthew Southern of the University of Souther of the University of South Carolina, they reported that when managers underperformed the earnings expectations set by analysts who are following their company, they often publicly talked about their focus on ESG. So they shift and suddenly they're a poor performer and suddenly they say, well, we're now this ESG company and focus on the ESG part of their company. But when they exceeded earnings expectations, they made few, if any, public statements related to ESG. So, you know, some of this very dynamic environment right now, I think there's 119 different laws throughout the states that are being considered based on the ESG investing. I think we have to provide some clear direction. ESG is sort of a new term. Since the public law that Ms. Leary referenced has come into play, and I just think we need to strengthen it, hence the reason for this bill.
Thank you. Any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, any closing comments?
I'd just like to thank you all for hearing this, and I appreciate it, and I think it's time that we maybe update our statute and include some of the new terms and the new investment strategies that some of the boards of investment companies are taking into account, and I think we need to provide a little bit clearer direction. So I appreciate it, Co-Chair Foster.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative McCabe. So with that, our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting will be today at 1:30 p.m. We'll hear the FY25 operating budget overview from the Department of Education and Early Development. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, will be adjourned at 9:50 a.m. Thank you.